Hello and welcome to Men in Progress, the podcast of United Methodist Men of Treach here in Flower Mound, Texas. We're part of the Life Plus God podcast series from Treach Memorial United Methodist Church, and you're listening to episode 27, our March 2024 podcast. I'm your host, Dave Casey, and if you've read the Bible, if you've been to church, if you've been around people on this planet, Christian or otherwise, you've encountered people who say one thing and do another. As much as we wish it wasn't, sometimes hypocrisy is part of all of our DNA, at home, at work, and yes, even at church. In this episode of Men in Progress, we're going to tackle that topic and more as we discuss the H-bomb, how hypocrisy is damaging the church and always has. Joining me to talk about that are three of my brothers from Treach who've shared their wisdom with us before, Jim Gerber, Alan Carruth, and Chuck Mosley. Guys, welcome back to Men in Progress.
Thank you so much, Dave. Howdy.
Hi, Dave.
Howdy, howdy. So this ought to be a wonderful take on this tonight. So I'll start right with the first question. How do you define hypocrisy, and what are some concrete examples when you've seen it? So I'll start with Chuck Mosley.
Well, you know, this is I think you said it well. It's a sticky topic. To me, a hypocrite is someone who pretends to be something that they're probably not. However, I don't think that means they do it intentionally. I think it just happens because I think
the inadvertent hypocrite.
Yes, and I think of myself as a hypocrite quite often. So that's how I would define it, and we'll go with that.
All right, Jim, how about you?
I think the definition is pretty easy. It's saying one thing and doing another. Now, the hardest thing is recognizing hypocrisy in yourself.
Oh, yeah.
It requires a lot of self-introspection, which typically men are not very good at.
Pretty easy to point out the other guy.
Yeah.
Super. Alan, I think you've probably thought about this a little bit.
Oh, occasionally I do. You know, I go before God and with trembling and look in the mirror and say, am I that or not? And often I am that, which I wish I was not. So the definition has changed the more I understand what it is. As Jim said, you don't recognize it because you're doing it too.
Yeah,
so everybody feels justified in being that which you are not.
There's safety in numbers there.
Yes, for an example, and you look around and you say, oh, my goodness gracious, people. And, of course, we always put the worst offenders right there at the top and say, I'm not that. And so we look at people, something simple like drug addicts or alcohol abusers or this, and they say, oh, I'm not that. And yet they reap destruction everywhere they go.
Yeah, definitely. Well, if you actually look at the etymology of hypocrisy, it comes from the Greek word for jealousy, play acting, acting out, and coward. So that's kind of an interesting combination. So Jim, can you pick any of those four and tie those to hypocrisy? I mean, jealousy, play acting, coward?
Well, I think they all play into being a hypocrite. It's definitely an issue of self-esteem in the hypocrite. He's playing into his weaker personality traits by trying to appear more important to everybody else.
Yeah, the word we hear a lot is righteous, I think, you know, that we talk about that. Chuck, how about you? Have you seen play acting, acting out, coward?
You know, as I think about this, it stirs me a little bit because I've frequently been confronted with, you know, You're one of those religious guys, and there's, you know, I see so much hypocrisy in religion and in church, and I'm just wondering. Yes, I first of all, thank you for lumping me into that group, so I appreciate that. Yeah. But secondly, I wonder if that keeps them from becoming part of our group. Exactly, what groups are they a part of where there is no hypocrisy?
Yeah,
because I'm not really aware of any. So, I think we've all seen it in the workplace, the guy or the person who wants to appear something they're not, and that's a political play within the workplace. So, seen that an awful lot. I can't really say in my life that I see it as much as some, because I am probably, like the rest of you, like to distance myself from that, is because, you know, I don't need that influence, because sure. I've got enough of that going on myself.
Definitely so. Well, you know, it's good. Before we get too far down the road, I think it might be good to ground our conversation in what Jesus had to say about hypocrisy, since, you know, this is a church broadcast, so maybe we should dive into the bottle.
I think that's
a
good idea.
So, spoiler alert, he wasn't a fan, believe it or not, of hypocrisy. So we'll start with Matthew 6, verse 1, and Jesus says, "Be careful not to practice your righteousness in front of others to be seen by them. If you do, you will have no reward from your Father in heaven." Sounds pretty convicting. Then in Matthew, in 23, Jesus says, "Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites! You are like whitewashed tombs, which look beautiful on the outside, but on the inside are full of the bones of the dead and everything unclean. In the same way, on the outside you appear to people as righteous, but on the inside you are full of hypocrisy and wickedness." And then here's my favorite, in Luke, where Jesus says, "How can you say to your brother, 'Brother, let me take that speck out of your eye,' when you yourself fail to see the plank in your own eye? You hypocrite, first take the plank out of your eye, then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye." Those are pretty tough verses to deal with. So I guess the first thing we should discuss is that, why is it so hard not to be hypocritical? Jim, have you thought about that?
Well, the hardest part is, like I said before, recognizing hypocrisy in yourself.
Yeah.
Because a hypocrite doesn't think he's a hypocrite, typically.
Yeah.
They just think they're doing what they do.
Yeah, or what they're called to do.
You've
heard a lot of phrases that kind of describe that. So, I've seen hypocrites that are pretty quick to find the fault in others. So.
That's a common trait.
Yeah, yeah. Alan, how about you? Why is it so hard not to be hypocritical?
Well, the problem is we do not look at the standard enough to know what that is, and to realize that we have decided to make up the rules for ourselves and have convinced ourselves that this is okay. It is okay to be prideful and arrogant and look down on others because I know the rule book supposedly, and I have interpreted it correctly, and I know exactly what it means to, if you're a Christian, to be righteous, you know, to be right with God. But look at all of the things that I am doing, and that's what Jesus came and said. I think you are fairly clueless on the topic. Have you really read the scriptures? Do you even have a clue what Moses was talking about? And so when you come up and say things like that, you have to be careful when you tell that to people because they don't take it well. As I look at myself and, you know, you read and read and read and you go to Bible studies and you listen to others' opinions and you decide, well, maybe they're right or not. Said what they're saying kind of convicts me, you know. And, you know, after you get convicted a few times, if you're brave enough to go before God and say, "Okay, God, I need your help to understand this," that puts you in a position, God says, "Well, okay, are you really going to listen this time?"
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so
it gives us a few shots at that.
But once you start to see the standard, and you really look in the mirror and say, "Am I that?" then it becomes clear. And then you can start on the long journey to not be that, which you have been so well.
Yeah, we'll get into that a little bit, I think, as we go further. So, Chuck, I think you kind of alluded to this, but as I mentioned at the top, hypocrisy is something that just seems to be part of being human. It's part of the human condition, I think. But do you think as Christians we have a greater responsibility to keep our own hypocrisy in check? I mean, we've got that fish on the, you know, I know you've got the fish on the back of your car. I've seen it, yeah.
Is there enough evidence to prove?
Right? Exactly.
I had it on my motorcycle. Don't have it on my car.
Well, your motorcycle, you can move, bob and weave. They can't really see it.
Cover it up, too. I think going back to something Alan just said, the reason it's so hard is the human condition. But we have been given an example. Christ gave us the example. All we have to do is that. And so since the beginning of time, since Christ, I don't know of anyone that's accomplished that. I'm sure there are lots and lots of people who have come very close and whose hearts and minds are right with God. But I'm also going to guess that because they're human, every now and then they judge their neighbor or judge their spouse or judge their something. And it's just that. It's the heart, the human condition.
Sure.
And,
you
know, it's born out of pride. I can make my life's goal every day to be a humble man. I can make that my goal, and it is my pride that jumps in front of that almost 100% of the time.
Yep. Well, and it's interesting. I think we've all kind of talked around this, but Jim, I'll ask you, do you find Christians to be more hypocritical than others you know, or do you think we're just seen that way because we profess to try to live a life like Jesus, and then clearly we don't make it. We fall short in some way.
I think it kind of goes along with the lyrics to a song that says, you've been charged with being Christians, but there's not enough evidence to convict.
Like that.
Well, yes, Christians.
I can hear that with the banjo in the background.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. I can hear it now.
Wow.
But as Christians, I think we're a little more sensitive to it. Maybe
at least
looking for
be.
Hypocrisy in others more than the general population.
Yeah.
Particularly when it comes to a certain prosperity gospel, perhaps.
Yeah.
Or other religions or movements that we may consider hypocritical
to
Christ's teachings.
And I think we, if you look at the history of the church, I think for the first I don't know, 100 years, maybe the church was unified. And then right away, there started to be splinter groups within the church. You're not doing this right. You're not doing that right. Eventually led to the Reformation. So there's a lot that went on there. And I think that there's probably, in my opinion, no more or less hypocrisy within Christians. It's just that we're kind of in the spotlight because it's kind of part of our credo. It's part of what we should be doing. There's other groups that being hypocritical is not out of line, you know? So I think maybe that's why we see a little more light on ours. I don't think it's any secret, particularly we get into politics, we get into everything that happens, that hypocrisy is highly toxic and it's very damaging, I think, in a church environment. In the past year or so, there was a study done and they asked more than 500 Gen Z and millennials. Now, full disclosure to our audience, there are no Gen Z or millennials anywhere near these microphones. And we won't go into ages or any of that kind of stuff. But anyway, the question was about their faith or spirituality and going to church. And I just want to read you a couple of results from that study and kind of get your reactions. So when asked for their reasons for not regularly attending church services, 22% said they had a bad experience at church in the past. 24% said they didn't feel welcome. And topping the list at 36%, really more than one in three of this Gen Z millennial population, said church members are too judgmental. Thoughts on that? And I think we have some children that fit maybe into those categories. And we could use them as sounding boards, but...
Well, one thing I would say, one of the very most compelling reasons I like fellowship and church and following Jesus is that, okay, I know that's a problem within myself. And when I surround myself with better people, with people who realize that about themselves and are striving for that benchmark, I want to be around those kind of people.
Yeah.
And what helped them might help me. And so I think that is every bit of a reason to go to church. I sympathize with those people who have had a bad experience at church. I do. I think it happens all too often. I think it's probably happened to all of us. It's one of those things that if you want to improve yourself, you will find a way to fight through that.
So you're looking at it exactly the opposite of that opinion that people voiced, which was church is too judgmental. I think you're actually saying, yeah, I need a little judgment. Maybe I need a little accountability.
I do.
Yeah.
Every day.
Yeah. Alan, what do you think on that?
Well, when you consider anybody who has had an experience that says, well, I don't see why anybody would do that. I don't see the purpose. It's certainly, if they look at somebody and say, well, I don't see that it's done you any good, even though you say you're professing to be that, you know, it really is cuts you to the quick.
And that's so, a tough sell. Yeah.
You know, so personally, you know, as I started to examine and hear, you know, the pastors say, hey, have you ever considered getting outside of your clique and going over and saying hi to somebody you don't know?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's hard and intentionally. I mean, today you would say, you were introverted and shy and you didn't speak, you know, well, that's God. That's not me.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I mean, God's been working on you pretty well, I think.
But you have to understand, you know, okay, am I going to do this or not? You know, I have been commanded. Jesus said, go and love people and quit casting judgment and all those things, you know, those wonderful scriptures that illustrate from different perspectives. A similar problem is that we have decided that we understand what it means to be a follower of Christ without looking at the standard.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so for me, my journey has been, okay, I am going to take a chance and go up and be friendly to somebody. And now I can't help myself.
But now you're good with the 24%. So
right.
You just roughly, you know, three quarters of them you got to work on.
I'm trying, you know, and even outside of the church, I say, you know, if I can say, well, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
Would you like to give it a second chance and come with me?
So, might have been just the wrong place at wrong time.
Right.
Jim, if you of those three, I mean, we're talking about bad experience at church, weren't welcomed, and I've experienced judgment. You know, which one do you think is?
I think it depends on the how they were brought up. Were they brought up in the church,
right,
and had a bad experience, or were they visiting a church and had a bad experience? You can find judgmental people everywhere.
Sure,
I don't think that should be a big player in it, but I think the younger generation looks at all the different flavors of religion there are out there and say, why?
Yeah.
Why are still many differences?
Yeah, why are they? And I think that whole thing of finding your space and finding the right place for you, it's interesting. We talk about being intentional. If somebody's new and they come in, and I'm hoping at Treach, that we reach out to them several different ways. Hopefully somebody greeted them at the door. If they didn't recognize them, they may have introduced themselves. You know, I'm Bob at the door. You know, glad, welcome. All the way through to we ask newcomers to run to the newcomer desk and find out a little more about our church. But I think in between there may be people that aren't too extremes. One is, I wasn't felt very welcome. The other one, I was a little overwhelmed with everybody coming after me, right? Like, oh, you know, you're not from here. Let me give you, let me talk to you. And I liken it to something that happened several years ago. I was at Texas A&M, of all places, because my son was there. And it was college game day. So we were there, college game days, big, huge crowd. And Gene Stallings was there. Gene Stallings actually coached Texas A&M, also coached Alabama. Was successful at both programs, and he's kind of a hero to both sets of fans, and we were playing Alabama that day. So there's a ton of Alabama fans there. And Texas A&M has a thing that when you walk up to somebody, whether you know them or not, you howdy. You know, it's a big howdy deal. And I was standing there. There was a golf cart that had R.C. Slocum and it had Gene Stallings in there, and there was a guy from Alabama. He just wanted to shake Gene Stallings' hand. I could tell. He's just there waiting to talk to him. And we're talking, visiting a little bit, and like five people came by and said howdy to this guy. And I could see his eyes starting to roll back in his head. And he goes, I turned to him. I said, you've been over howdied, haven't you? He goes, oh, yeah, big time. You know, so I'm a little worried that we do that sometimes too. So I think both of those things could put people off. But the underlying thing is that there's this generation that's feeling that, for whatever reason, they've had bad experience with church, and there's a follow on to that. The same group was asked about the meaning of spirituality, and 35% said that reading the Bible was important, 52% said prayer was essential, and 66% agreed spirituality should focus on loving your neighbor. What do you think was the most important to Gen Z and the millennials regarding spirituality? So I'll ask Chuck this. See, he's got a lot of millennials in his family.
Well, I wanted to follow up the church thing. One thing I read, okay, if you're going to, if you think you've found the perfect church that's just spot on perfect, don't join it because you'll screw it up.
Okay, maybe so, it's not for you.
There's no such thing. If being loved too much is a put off, I'm going to suggest that's really not the issue. There are other issues.
Yeah.
So spirituality is something I don't know certainly how qualified I am. I do believe, I have a profound belief in reading the Bible and in prayer. Spirituality is one of those things I think that comes with that. It's not, you're not going to walk in a church and, I mean, well, you might walk in a church and be overwhelmed with everything going on there. And God may appear to you there. That I can't rule that out. It hasn't happened to me. Mm-hmm. I don't know anyone it has happened to. However, I know a lot of people have spoken to God in the church.
Yeah.
I think aligning expectations, I think it goes back to something Jim said a moment ago, depends on how they were raised, what they're familiar with, what turns them on, what turns them off. If people being too friendly turns them off, that's something that probably is a little deeper than what we're talking about here. But I also believe that that person is supposed to be there regardless of the situation. God will take care of it.
Yeah. And if that's the worst thing that happens, that you're over-welcomed, then maybe we're doing okay. Doing that. So, Alan, to kind of go back to the spirituality thing, this Gen Z and millennials, what do you think is their most important thing when it comes to spirituality?
To me, probably being judgmental. That affects everything. You know, we do some prison ministry, and we talk to broken people, and we know that they have been called all sorts of names that are very judgmental, and that has torn them down and made them feel worthless. And it makes it hard to connect. If that's the first thing that came out of the mouth is something criticizing something about them, even if they don't intend for it to be, you know, one of the first things that turned me off from another denomination was, do you know Jesus?
Yeah.
You know, and that was a judgmental statement, assuming that I was going to that H place.
Yeah, if you don't, you're broken.
You know, and have I done it right?
Yeah, you might be done for. Yeah.
It's pretty easy to feel that. So I don't know if that's the right answer or not. But
believe it or not, you hit the right answer.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay, so
oh my goodness.
There were 600 people polled of these millennials and Gen Zs. 87% said spiritual growth should include learning how to accept and not judge others, you know, and just take that level of acceptance. And again, a way to model Christ. So I don't know. What's your reaction to that, Jim? Is that jive with what you've seen?
I think that rings very true. Yeah. With not just the younger generation, but with everybody.
Yeah. I think I agree that, hopefully that's what we're called to do. And it's pretty hard, though, because not everybody looks the same. Everybody acts the same, talks the same, dresses the same. I mean, there's a lot of has the same beliefs, even though they may have a strong belief in God and belief in Jesus, it may not align with ours. And so there's always those variations that make it make me susceptible to judge when I probably shouldn't.
I think the comment, the most important one to them is love your neighbor. I think certainly Jesus' final words, and I think certainly important. I also think it's something very easy to hide behind. It sounds to me oftentimes when people go straight there that is a crutch for them because they don't have a lot of other understanding of the rest of it. Right. And I think that's just what I hear. Now, having said that, that makes me sound judgmental, which makes me a hypocrite. So, guilty.
Well, that's why we invited you here, Chuck. Come on.
Thank you. True to form.
Wouldn't have it another way. Yeah. You're the entertainer.
Oh, good. Good.
So, I do think it's worth discussing, though, if you know, young people are the future, both Treach and just churches in general. It's no secret that mainline churches are losing population. They're consolidating. They're, you know, giving up buildings. And I think if we're not working to be genuine, honest, and forgiving, and maybe less holier than thou, I think we have a stand a good chance that we're not going to increase our attendance and population and get the younger folks involved. Does that jive with what you're thinking, Alan?
I'll tell you what, I remember a pastor on a Mayus walk who stood up and he introduced his talk as, "My name is so-and-so and I'm a sinner." Yeah. I think that we ought to admit who we are, and, you know, the path to understanding is humility, and that you do not do without divine intervention.
Right.
So until you get to the point that you can portray Jesus to somebody who did not pass judgment on anybody except when they deserved it, and that was usually directed at the religious elite. It wasn't to the common people who had already been judged and said, "You are not worthy." If that's the vibe that we're giving off, then there is something wrong.
Yeah, yeah. Because in most cases, I would say, not that I'm a Bible scholar, but when Jesus interacted with individuals, a lot of times they were individuals that already had been condemned by others or were being shunned by others, whether it's a leper or someone that's lame or blind or even a tax collector.
Well, you know, considering the religious elite, which, you know, hopefully we are not considering that, even though we are well-versed in study and know the scripture fairly well or pray every day and seek forgiveness and try to give it to people, you know, it's just really hard.
Yeah,
it's just really hard to get out of your own little world and your own little I've got it right mindset. And look at people, you know, when Jesus was confronted by a hypocritical elite person and they were there to justify themselves before him, he always asked them a question which made them think, "Did I really read the manual correctly? Did I get the most important? I put the most important thing to understand at the very bottom."
Yeah.
And did all the other things well. You know, and so those are things we all have to sort out so that we can, I don't care who it is. You know, it's the guy, you know, I was approached by a nice man in the Tom Thumb parking lot in Flower Mound of all places. Says, "Do you have a couple of dollars?" And rather than looking at him and saying, "Well, what are you going to do?" I just said, "Here's $2. I hope this gets you where you need to go."
Yeah.
And that's all I had to say.
Yep.
So.
And that's probably all he wanted to hear. So you get down to it. So let's talk practicality for a moment. I'm going to direct this at Mr. Jim over here. So are there things in your own life that you try to do to limit your own hypocrisy? How do you manage that?
You know, like I alluded to at the beginning, it's hard for men to be introspective, especially me. I'm not very good at it, but I do try to surround myself with people who will hopefully tell me if I'm being a hypocrite.
Yeah, that's that accountability piece.
It's the accountability, right?
Which is one thing. Those folks that are hesitant about joining a church or joining a religious organization of any sort, I think talking about accountability has been helpful to me. I just say, you know, it's just good to have people surrounding you that you can talk straight with and are definitely going to hold you accountable. Yeah. I think, and do that on a regular basis, have a cadence to it. Do that. Chuck, how about you?
I think that's very true. You know, I mentioned earlier how much I believe in reading the Bible every day and praying every day. That's how I feel now. 10 years ago, I wasn't so much. You know, I knew it was important, and I did it some. Yep. But so I can empathize with anyone who doesn't immediately grasp that. I didn't either. It took me a lot of years, and I wasted them. And part of my desire here is to share that with younger people so they don't waste those years. Because what's going to happen is they're going to turn 50, they're going to turn 55, and they're going to be right here where we are. And that's going to be great, okay? But
Yeah, gosh, we're just over 55. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll use those terms very loosely. If it could have happened in my 30s. And sure. I could have given God so much more.
Yep. So I'll follow up with this, and I'd like everybody to answer this one because I think it's a cool question. When you find yourself doing or saying something hypocritical, you kind of catch yourself, what do you do in the moment? Do you acknowledge it? Do you say something? You just stop talking? Hello, Jim, how about?
Well, it hasn't happened yet. It
hasn't happened. Wow. We'll keep an eye on you just
okay.
in case.
Let me know. No, if I think I'm veering toward hypocritical thought yeah. or actions, I try to just stop whatever I'm doing.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
it could be by thought, word, or deed, right?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. Alan, how about yourself? Have you caught yourself in that kind of situation?
That is one of the things I pray every morning is to help me not betray you, oh God. And so after praying that for a decade or so, it becomes more difficult to do that.
Yeah.
First, I have gotten really good at stopping and thinking before I say anything. And that takes a while to get to where you can do that successfully. And so many times people come at you and they're very vicious, attacking, condemning. And so it's hard not to respond in kind
yeah.
to that type of thing.
Oh, yeah.
And so you just have to think, well, what did Jesus do? He just took a deep breath, and he knew he was connected with the Father and the Holy Spirit, and so he was well-armed.
And he usually asks them a question.
And so the thing is, that what I say, you're going to have to help me understand why you would say that so that I can respond appropriately. Yeah. Yeah. When Jesus says, love as I have loved you, boy, that is a lifetime adventure.
Yeah.
And it's a new thing every day. And I talk to the guys up at the Denton Freedom House all the time. I said, are you prepared for when you are ambushed?
Yeah.
Because it's coming
sure.
every day. So,
yep.
So I pray for that mindset so that I do not misrepresent or betray the image of God to people.
So, Chuck, you and I have an innate advantage with this because we are in sales. and we're trained in sales, very much so that you have one mouth and two ears. So you should be shut up and listen is kind of your mantra.
Right? Yes.
If you're a good salesperson.
Yes.
And we've seen ones that
that's the plan. Anyway.
That's the plan.
Yeah.
You know. So hopefully, to me, that's helped. It's helped when I'm confronted or accused or even if it's just a discussion and I can just kind of tell there's maybe a veiled implication there or something. My immediate tendency is to say, kind of burr up. Hey, what's up? But a lot of times you just be quiet because there might have been a test on their part just to see what you're going to do.
Very true. Very true. The listening is the key, right? Like Alan, I pray in the morning that I will show God, Jesus' face to everyone I come in contact with.
Yep.
And I can remember instances where it probably wasn't 15 seconds before I broke that. Yeah. But at least I had a goal. I had a plan.
Yeah.
And, most of the time when I have realized the levels of my hypocrisy have been after the fact. I'm a pretty emotional guy, so I run hot and cold. And I have I've either been called attention to that by my lifelong spouse or or one of my kids as they should do, or I just come upon it myself, probably God telling me.
Yeah. So the next question is tougher, so I'm going to direct it at Jim, because I know that he can take it. So what do you do when you see someone that you're close to acting hypocritically? Do you ignore it? Do you call it out? How do you approach that?
Probably wouldn't call it out directly as hypocrisy, but maybe try to steer them in a different direction.
Yeah.
A soft touch rather than a hammer.
Kind of the Dr. Phil, how's that working out for you thing?
Yeah.
that might be one aspect. Alan, have you encountered that? And You know, we're all in accountability groups, so I bet you we've
You know, I've heard people talk about, well, what is your relationship with that person? So if it's someone close, hopefully you have a relationship that is not going to be destroyed with a loving, honest, you know, say, did I see you? Or did I hear you say?
Yep.
And can you help me walk me through what that response was about, and then allow that to just play out?
Yeah.
I'm not going to say, you said and you have professed, but I saw you, and then just come after him. And that is a relationship breaker.
Oh, yeah.
And that will require a while to restore. I don't like doing that. So, again, lessons learned, and, you know, words hurt. And,
sure.
And it's forgiveness comes slowly in those types of things, and that's just not a good path.
Yeah, people that I'm close to, I try to make a point of, in some way, saying, I give you total permission to call me out if you see me either do or say something that you think is counterintuitive, or, you know, not what I represent myself to be, or what I told you I was going to be, or even what you think I should be.
You know? Absolutely.
You know, there's that end of it too. So probably the even tougher question is, what would Jesus want us to do? I mean, I don't have the wristband on right now, but how do you think Jesus would handle those? And I think there's some great examples we've already talked about in Scripture, but you know, I'm just trying to think of that voice in my head.
I would use the sales analogy, Dave. Ideally, what Jesus would want you to do is listen to the person, and then listen not just to the words they say, but how they say them. Understand what that person is about, where they're coming from, before you respond with anything. You can't help a person until you have some understanding of what is causing the behavior. So you can judge them. Boom, you're off the track. But so listening, and I'm not saying I'm good at it. There are times when, you know, yes, and times when certainly not. But if you'll listen and understand where that person's coming from, maybe you can even have a share that view from them. And then Jesus, I think, would probably operate in that manner, and then guide them back around to what is a better view, possibly, without being confrontational, without being judgmental.
You know, Dave, family members are that have a track record of doing this over and over again, and you come back and you say, oh, my goodness, they're back again, and they're trying to manipulate me and do all this kind of stuff, and they are just the ultimate hypocrite, you know?
Yeah.
But they're your flesh and blood, and you're going, what do I do about this? And, you know, I have a sibling who I had to finally just confront and say, I know the truth, and I'm not going to take it anymore.
Yeah, yeah. Those are hard conversations.
And you just have to do it. But even after that, and some time, you know, I finally said, despite, I still love you, and I forgive you, and I still reach out. I mean, we do not have a lot of conversations anymore, but there are opportunities that I can say that. So, I mean, I don't stop. I don't give up. Even though I'm not sure, I said, God, is this worth it? I mean, golly, gee, you know, this is frustrating and exhausting, and do I have the energy to do this anymore? But I always hear, Alan, have you asked me to help?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think you answered the question of what Jesus would do, because many times it seems like that was his answer. Despite everything you've done, Israel, or whoever the subject may be, I still love you. I'm still in your corner. I'm still there for you. So, Jim, did you want to weigh in on that or go for the last one?
I have nothing left to add to that one. Well, did a great job.
Well, this is kind of an overall question. Just any other observations from you guys, or what you think Christians might do better when it comes to that H-bomb, that hypocrisy situation?
I'll jump in. I think certainly, and I would agree. I will imagine that everyone in this room is aware of it. I think most people in the church are probably aware of it. However, I'm going to suggest that some are not. Some are not as aware of how sensitive it is for the Gen Zs, the millennials, and other people. So just be sensitive about it. It is a thing, and I can't subscribe to, again, back to what organizations are you aware of, a member of and actively involved in that don't have hypocrites. The reason we come to church largely is to be better people. We're aware of this about ourselves, and so we like it that in some ways there are other people there with faults just like ours, because we can go there and learn how to overcome them together.
Yep. Anything?
You know, if someone is open to taking a journey, you know, we say, first of all, we all say, are you guilty? Say, yes, I am guilty. I'm a sinner. I'm a hypocrite. That's okay. So what is the path forward? You know, and I've chosen a path this time going through Lenten season with an intentional say, okay, it's not just about giving something up for the reason of giving. I told somebody, if you're not going to be a different person at the end of the journey, why did you take it?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so what are the themes? You know, repentance, humility, suffering, lament. You know, on the way down, what did Jesus experience? Have I been on that path? Was it necessary? Why would I bother? Why did Jesus have to go through it? I mean, you know, so these are things, I mean, you need.
And they all tie together. And particularly somebody outside the church, or maybe with a cursory knowledge of the church, they don't think on that level.
No,
it's very helpful.
I'm talking about people who are bought in. Yes, I believe in Jesus. And I want to be a disciple, you know, and that puts, okay, well, there's a job description with that.
Sure is.
Right? You know,
I'll be teaching on that in June, actually.
Oh, okay. so you have to decide, okay, well, am I all in or not? Because Jesus said, okay, if you're still giving me excuses, then you're not worthy. He gave it to people all the time. And so we just have to come to that and say, okay, and be committed to a path and say, well, shoot, this was only, you know, a 40-day journey versus a lifetime, but at least it can show you something. Yeah. So that's what I would tell somebody. I said, okay, admit it, and then find some path that will help you see the way forward.
Yep. And I think it's just very positive to open the dialogue. You know, if somebody starts talking about hypocrisy, hopefully we're equipped to, you know, engage in the conversation and have some meaningful discourse and leave them with a better impression.
Be careful of being too defensive.
Of that. Exactly. Well, as I expected, this has been a robust discussion, and I really appreciate you guys joining me. This episode of Men in Progress, we'll do it again soon. Thanks for coming, guys.
Thank you, Dave.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you.
So there you have it, episode 27 of Men in Progress. We hope you enjoyed our discussion and that you'll join us again in April for a very special episode called A Heart for God with Treach members Jackson and Jamie Blanton. When Jackson was 16, he received a heart transplant. And in April, Jackson and his mother Jamie will join us to share their inspiring story of love and faith. We hope you'll join us. Thanks again to Jim Gerber, Alan Carruth, and Chuck Mosley for joining me, and thanks to everyone listening to Men in Progress from the United Methodist Men of Treach here in Flower Mound, Texas. I'm Dave Casey. We'll see you next time.
This episode of the Men in Progress podcast is sponsored by Treach Memorial United Methodist Church, where our mission is to lead people into a growing relationship with Jesus Christ. If you're in or near Flower Mound, Texas on any Sunday morning, we would love to welcome you to any of the Treach services. Or you can follow our services anytime on our Facebook page or at tmumc.org.